You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
Flying in Canada is super expensive, and the few affordable options that do exist recently got, well, a lot fewer.
Lynx Air adds its name to the long list of grounded airlines across Canada. Analysts say it's not a surprise because making a go of it as a discount carrier isn't easy.
Last week, the final Lynx Air flight landed. The closure just ahead of March break caught customers by surprise. And it came less than 2 years after the company's first flight. So what went wrong? Why wasn't Lynx able to keep their promise of making air travel more affordable for Canadians? And what does this latest shutdown mean for travelers? I'm Melissa Duggan, and this is The Big Story. Joe Naprowski is a management consultant and freelance writer who focuses on business, technology, and society. Hi, Jonah.
Hi.
Tell me about the announcement that came from Lynx Air just over a week ago. What did they say?
So Lynx Air announced that they were applying for creditor protection, which is the first step in the bankruptcy process. And they announced that they were winding down operations. So customers who had existing tickets with Lynx wouldn't be able to take whatever leg of their flight they were waiting on after February 26th and had to make other travel plans.
It sounds like a nightmare. All of a sudden, customers have their ticket, but they can't fly somewhere.
Yeah, that's correct. So, Lynx offers service to places like Cancun or Las Vegas and plenty of Canadian destinations. And you can imagine that getting this notice from the airline that your flight home has been canceled and that you will not expect to receive a refund can be quite troubling. In some cases, customers of Lynx's were looking at alternative travel plans that were going to cost them several thousands of dollars just to get home. And the only recourse that they really had was to try to contact their credit card provider to get a refund or block a payment. And in a lot of cases, that didn't really work out. So what started as very cheap getaways or vacations for a lot of Canadians ended up being very expensive ones.
What reasons did they give for deciding to shut down the business?
So according to the statement that Lynx released, it was a number of factors. They mention higher than expected operating costs. They mention fuel prices, which rose sharply through the pandemic. They mentioned an exchange rate that was unfavorable. So again, following the pandemic, the Canadian exchange rate relative to the US dollar had fallen. And they also mentioned rising airport fees, which is kind of a contentious issue in the Canadian market.
So it sounds like a whole bunch of things had to go wrong for Lynx to go under.
That's true in a sense. So the market in Canada for aviation did change drastically in the last couple of years with COVID and the inflationary run-up that it brought about. I think Canadians themselves know this. We've all felt the kind of pain and pinch of higher prices, and this affected aviation quite acutely. So things like pilot salaries rose really sharply following the pandemic, and that transformed an airline's cost base. But also, I think it's worth saying that a lot of these problems predate Lynx. So there are a number of factors that make Canada a particularly difficult place to operate a low-cost carrier.
What makes Lynx different from big carriers like WestJet and Air Canada in terms of both where they fly and the user experience?
So a company like Air Canada operates almost 200 aircraft. They fly all over the world, and they offer Canadians a relatively comfortable experience relative to that of budget carriers. So you'll know if you've flown Air Canada on a transatlantic flight, for example, a carry-on bag is typically free. They'll feed you. It's something of a comfortable experience relative to what a company like Lynx will offer, which is a really a no-frills experience. So you pretty much pay for a seat and nothing else. And then something like even a carry-on bag will run you between $30 and $50. There's really, on Lynx, I don't think they offered food, but certainly there's food for purchase on other discount carriers. So from a traveler's perspective, you typically would opt to fly a legacy carrier up and until the point that it's so much cheaper that you'd want to fly a discount carrier like Lynx.
And if you're taking one of those discount carriers, if you don't read that fine print, what a shock it can be when you're at the airport.
That's right. So in some cases on a longer haul Lynx flight, I think a checked bag would run you as much as $100 Canadian. And on a trip from Toronto to Calgary, where the whole base fare of the flight might only cost that much, it can certainly be shocking if that's news to you, only at the airport at the gate.
When did this push to establish low-cost carriers begin in earnest in Canada?
So the move toward low-cost carriers begins in Canada around the 1990s with WestJet. So WestJet actually enters the market to kind of undercut Air Canada on price, but they've since remodeled themselves much more closely to Air Canada, offering a wide selection of fares at different price points. But around this time and into the early 2000s, other brands like Flair and a number of other Canadian brands that have since gone out of business, like Jet Naked and Fly2, enter the market as well. And that's when we see this kind of rush of low-cost carriers come to Canada, just as they've propped up in other parts of the world.
So obviously, Lynx isn't the first one to go bust here. What happened to Swoop last year? Was their story similar? And what about the other airlines? Did they have a similar kind of process that they followed, launching with all these promises, and then just a short time later, like Lynx didn't last 2 years, they go under?
That's right. So with Swoop, they sort of enter the market with a lot of promise. What happened in Swoop's case was WestJet had acquired Swoop and pretty much dissolved the brand. And actually, in a series of blog posts authored by WestJet CEO Alexis von Hernsbroch, he's actually fairly transparent about why they did that. And he basically lays out a number of factors that make Canada a relatively unattractive place to operate a low-cost airline. And so in his view, it simply made more sense to just offer additional WestJet flights with a series of different fares, including economy, economy plus, and business, and so on, than it did to continue to operate Swoop as a low-cost carrier.
What does this mean for consumers?
Well, in some sense, this trend has gone on for a long time, and new market entrants really haven't been all that deterred, right? So even despite a number of Canadian ultra low-cost carriers going out of business, there always seems to pop up another market entrant here and there. So it's possible that we will see the resurrection of this kind of business model in Canada in some form. And I think it's also worth saying that for Canadians, the general sense from what's been reported is that the price of airfare in the country actually won't rise that meaningfully after Lynx's exit from the market. And the reason is because legacy carriers like WestJet and Air Canada dominate the market to such an extent that these smaller entrants didn't really have that much pricing power in the first place.
How is the business model different for these cheap airlines compared to bigger carriers? We know from previous interviews on this show that air travel is already a pretty low margin business. So how is it supposed to work with such cheap airfare?
So low-cost carriers like Lynx will tell you that they are actually not competing directly with legacy carriers like Air Canada and WestJet. Their goal was to pry off demand from bus and train routes, for example, and also spur new demand where none existed. So the hope was that Canadians who previously couldn't afford to travel by plane would opt to take an extra vacation in a given year, and that they do so on the basis of ultra-low fares being offered. And I think where you can see this model work really well is in Europe, where Ryanair, for example, where I am here in London, they don't really compete with British Airways. What they really do is actually compete with train routes to Central Europe. And in some cases, again, you see that people take leisure vacations here quite often. And the reason has to do with the fact that airfare is just really, really cheap. And it entices a whole new type of person to travel where they otherwise couldn't.
That sounds terrific. So why can't we make it work here in Canada?
There are two reasons. So the first is Canada is just a very different place geographically and demographically than the EU or the US. So Canada and the US and the EU, excluding Russia, are something like 9 or 10 million square kilometers. But Canada's population, of course, is some 40 million, whereas in the US, it's some 330 million. And in the EU, it's some 450 million. So there's a lot more demand in those markets. And not only that, the demand is relatively closely concentrated in a place like the EU. So again, here in London, where I'm based, you can get to, I don't know, two or three dozen major flight hubs in the span of about 2 hours. What does that mean for an airline? Well, they can serve all these different markets and keep costs relatively low because you obviously burn less fuel. You have to pay your staff less when the average flight is short. Whereas in Canada, right, if you're flying to Toronto to Calgary or Vancouver, you're flying for 3 to 4 to 5 hours. And again, you're serving markets that are just less densely populated than these European markets. So that's the first reason. And the second reason has to do with airport fees. So the simple explanation of this is that airport fees in this country are uniquely high. They're much, much higher than they are in the US and the EU. And that has to do with the funding model that this country has for funding airports and aviation infrastructure.
How does that work?
So in Canada, the airports are operated by nonprofits. In Toronto, that's the Greater Toronto Airport Authority. And the airports themselves are situated on government-owned land. So they pay the government rents to the tune of some $6 billion since this model was established in the 1990s. And we have what's called a user pay system. So in order to pay those rents, the airports will pass off those fees to customers. And you'll notice in Canada, if you've traveled recently, you can look at a detailed breakdown of your airfare receipt. And you'll see that in some cases, as much as half of your fare has gone to paying these fees, like on a route from Toronto to Calgary. Contrast that with a place like the US, where airports are funded by general taxpayers. So the government doesn't rent out the land that the airports are situated on. They simply own that land, and the general taxpayer funds aviation infrastructure. So what does that mean? Well, here in Canada, the average airport improvement fee, for example, in Toronto is some $35 to depart from Pearson Airport, whereas in the US, it's some $4 or $5. And that's what allows airlines to keep costs relatively low.
Do you see a world where that would ever change here in Canada?
It's certainly possible, and perhaps the exit of Lynx and other low-cost carriers from the market will motivate that change. In order for that to happen, I mean, there are a couple levers you could say this country could pull. So on the one hand, you could privatize airports to some sense. That's worked in Europe. There could be perhaps tighter oversight on airport fees. So some commentary that you read says, well, the nonprofits that operate these airports don't experience a lot of regulatory oversight. They sort of have a lot of power to set fees as they like. And then the other thing that might need to happen is you'd have to see potentially further reinvestment of rents from the federal government to the airports. So again, whereas in the US, many billions of dollars are spent on airports each year in government investment, the Canadian government doesn't really invest in airports. They treat them as so-called cash cows, and infrastructure and other investment come from the airports themselves.
So with Lynx out, what's the state of the ultra low cost market here in Canada? It's pretty much just Flair, right? How are they doing?
That's correct. It is just Flair. And there is some concern that that company's not in the best financial health. So in recent memory, folks may remember that the airline had some 4 planes seized from back payments on leases. They're also in something like $67 million in debt to the CRA. And so there is some sense that that company is seeing mounting debts, and their ability to pay it off by stimulating the kind of demand that Lynx Air hope to stimulate here in Canada is perhaps questionable.
Okay, so we talked about airport fees. Maybe there's a chance something can change there. We can't change Canada having a small population and this huge territory. Is there anything else that could be changed to have these cheap airlines work and stick around?
Yeah, so another idea that sometimes gets thrown around is the investment model and the regulation around it. So in Canada, for example, the maximum foreign ownership for an airline is 49%. And additionally, any single party can only own some 25% of an airline. So you think about in the United States, there are, you know, certain large investors. I'm thinking of the Warren Buffetts of the world, the Bill Ackmans of the world, who, if they're going to make a major move to save, for example, a dying airline, they'll take a kind of massive ownership stake in the company. That kind of investment is not possible in Canada. And you can imagine that in Lynx's hurry to try and raise capital, just as they were winding down the operation, something like that potentially could have happened and saved the airline if the regulation was scaled back a little bit.
What about the idea of more competition and opening up our skies to other airlines?
So I would argue that our skies are open to other airlines, but the airlines from the United States, for example, have largely been deterred from entering the Canadian market due to those high airport fees. So instead, what you see is airlines like Frontier and Spirit and other low-cost carriers in the United States mounting operations in places like Washington State and New York State and so-called border towns. And it's actually a fairly substantial part of their strategy. They rely on Canadians who are searching for low airfares to hop in the car in Southern Ontario, for example, drive an hour across the border, and then fly on an American carrier to, say, a sun destination in the Southern United States.
So there is hope that we could get a cheap flight in the future, maybe?
There is certainly hope. And again, if there's one thing that's been constant in Canada's aviation market, it has been attempts at innovation. So even though we are in a sort of lull and we've now in recent memory seen a kind of exodus of low-cost carriers, there's no reason to think that in the future, innovation and market entrance couldn't spur kind of new models for low-cost aviation in Canada.
Thanks for this, Jonah, and safe travels to you.
Thanks for having me.
Jonah Prowski is a management consultant and freelance writer who focuses on business, technology, and society. That was The Big Story. For more, visit thebigstorypodcast.ca. Feedback is always welcome. We'd love to hear your suggestions for a future episode. You can always email us at hello@thebigstorypodcast.ca or call us 416-935-5935. The Big Story Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. Like us, review us, rate us, share with a friend. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Duggan, in for Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.